Hi, welcome to Finders Grievers, a happy-ish podcast about sad things. I'm your host, Shohana Sharman Cecilia. This week, I'm sitting down with writer, comedian, and certified tallboy, Guled Abdi. Guled is a quarter of the multi-award-winning sketch troupe Tall Boys to Men. He has performed at OFF-JFL, Montreal Sketchfest, and the Toronto Fringe Festival. You can catch Guled on Tall Boys on CBC Gem or at random bars you didn't know had a comedy show. So, shall we jump into it?
Hi, how's it going?
Doing all right, you know? I mean, you know, as all right as I can be, you know? Like, sitting at home a lot is, man, thoughts, they go a mile a minute. And just trying to find times where I can not think is my favorite part of the day.
Yeah, it really, I've been watching so much trash TV, and I know it's not just me, like, everyone's watching trash TV, but, like, I'm watching, like, real trash TV, like, I'm watching a lot of Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh, I used to love that show.
It's really good. It's very, like, I think anything that's super predictable is working really well for my brain right now, because everything is unpredictable, and I'm like, give me something that, like, has a solid formula that I don't have to think about. I know where it ends. I know where it's going to, like, just, yeah, like wallpaper for the brain.
Absolutely. I feel like that is underrated. Like, I can't remember. Oh, it was The Mandalorian. That's what it was. Every time I watched The Mandalorian, I was like, I love this show because I know Mandalorian's always going to come out on top. Every episode, does not matter what happens. So I know, like, all the, any conflict or any moment where, like, will he? It's like, he will.
Yeah, yeah.
He will. Like, listen, I'd be surprised if they did something crazy, but he will. He'll get through this.
That's great. That's the one with Baby Yoda, right?
That's right, yeah. And then we find out his name is Grogu.
That's a pretty good name. It makes me think of Groot from, like, Guardians of the Galaxy.
And you know what? There was a lot of memes of, like, which one do you kill? Groot or Baby Yoda? One of them has to go. And, yeah, people, I think it was mixed. Yeah, it wasn't always like what I thought it would be.
I mean, one's a tree. I don't know if that makes it easier, actually. I don't know where I was going with that. You could kill a tree.
Yeah, you could.
Never mind. Cool. So I guess starting with the start, who did you lose?
I lost my mom. My mom passed away back in 2009 after battling cancer for like 11 years. So it was like a very long time. I didn't know then that 11 years is considered like amazing for someone to have cancer for that long. Because for the most part, like, she was fine. Like, she had surgeries. And eventually, and also had chemotherapy. And then the only thing she was on was like different medications that were a form of chemotherapy. That sometimes I think she went in to get like radiation treatment, but most of the time it was these pills. And then for a long time, I forgot she had cancer. Like, I knew it was something it was, but it just felt like it was in the background of our lives, not really something we thought about on a daily basis. Because she was like, outside of taking the pills, but she was still like, you know, an active person, still loved reading all the time, was up earlier than the rest of us, just doing stuff. So, like, I think, yeah, maybe my idea of what it means to be someone with cancer was like, you got to be bedridden and not doing much. But she was like doing more than I was.
How old were you at the time?
I was 21.
Wow, that's young.
Yeah, and then I think about my sister because I have like my family is quite large. My dad married three times, and I'm the middle family. I call ourselves the 2.0s. There's a 1.0 that are older and the 3.0s that are younger. And each version gets a little better. So I have in the 2.0s, I have like one full sister, and she is 4 years younger than me. So she was 17 when this happened. And it's still something that like I've talked to her maybe a little bit about, but like I didn't know what it's like because I was 21. I felt young, but then I was like, oh, she was really young, you know?
Yeah.
When it happened.
Isn't it strange how hard it is to talk to a sibling about it?
Yeah.
I have an older brother who is 4 years older than me, and we've never talked about it. Like, it's been 4 years since my mom passed away, and we never talk about it. Mm-hmm. He actually, my brother lives in the same building as me. He's upstairs with his wife. So he asked me to go see him this morning, and I went, and he had some of my mom's stuff that I guess my dad had given to him. And he was like, oh, we need to like figure out what's in this bag and, you know, see what we can keep, see what to do with. And the whole time it was like we were sitting on a couch facing this coffee table full of stuff and just like putting it into piles and not saying a single thing about what we were feeling inside. It's such a, I don't know. I can talk about this stuff with everyone in the world, but for some reason I can't talk about it with my family.
Yeah, that's, I think, yeah, I spent many years not even mentioning that my mom died. Like, it was something, I don't know if you've gone through this, where like you tell someone a parent died and they feel bad, and I don't want them to feel bad because it's like it's not something they did.
Yeah.
You know? So I'd always like try to like just not, like they were like, oh, and like your parents live here? I'm like, yes. Yes, they do. And who do you live with? My mom. Because I was always like, I'm like, I don't know, like, still I haven't found the, luckily, like, I mean, Rona, I don't have to really talk to anyone about this. In real life it wouldn't happen much before Rona, but it, when it would happen, I was still conflicted of when to tell people that mom passed away, because I still, for me, it's still like I realize it's a sore point. So if I bring it up, I know my eyes start welling up, and it's not anything I'm intentionally trying to do, it's just that memory still hurts, you know? Yeah. So I'm always like, I'm like, yeah, she's still alive. Yeah. It's much easier to do that than be like, I don't want to cry in front of these strangers or,
Can you tell me a little bit about your mom?
Yeah. Originally born in Somalia. Why did I say originally? Like, she was born in Somalia. Then the comic book, they really changed the story up, quite a lot, but, she's born in Somalia. Like, she seemed like a really cool person from the stories I've heard. Like, she was the first person in her family to, like, you know, that class story, first person in her family to go to university. She went to, at that time, Italians had a presence in Somalia. So she went to an Italian high school and learned Italian there. And then she went to university in Italy, did a pharmacy degree at first, and then was teaching at some point at university in Somalia. And then I think went back to go do a degree in nutrition, and then that's what she, as all my memories of her, is her working as a nutritionist. Yeah. And so, like, when the war broke out in Somalia, it's a world war of our own, it was a war that rocked our world, that's what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. We came to Toronto in like 92, and when the civil war thing broke out in 91, and we moved to Toronto, and like she pretty much raised us by herself because my mom and dad got divorced around that time. And so, yeah, so she like was like really like she loved reading, was extremely studious, always like, I believe that if she had lived longer, she would have just continued going to school. Cause even when she was like, even years before she passed, she was taking some program. I can't remember either George Brown or Seneca or something. Like, she just loved studying and loved learning about stuff. And I think in her heart wished we had the same love for studying and learning about things as she did. She could not cook Somali food for the life of her. She did not know how to make any of that, but all she knew how to make was Italian food. So that's what I grew up eating, was a lot of Italian food. And I remember I used to get mad at my younger sister because whenever we go to Somali restaurant, she's like, oh, this is what we eat at home. Like, I wish we ate this at home. Mom does not know how to make this. Are you crazy? We have pastas, you know? Mom tried to make a rice dish. It was terrible. Yeah, say, like, very strong-willed person, like, championed us. Like, when we moved here, like, I think she was just one of those parents who was aware of, like, being a Black person in white spaces and how people will either assume you don't know things or will treat you like you don't know things. And so I know that like she was that type of parent to write letters to schools in our behalf because like something had happened that she did not agree with. And I remember even, I think I have it somewhere, a letter that she wrote to my kindergarten teacher when we were in Toronto about the teacher was saying I was bothering students by tapping them on the shoulder a lot to get their attention. And Mom wrote back, she's like, he doesn't speak English. How do you expect him to communicate with people? And just really like tearing into this teacher. And this is like in the 90s, early 90s, you know? So I'm just like, that's the type of person she was. She was like, she did that for us. She did that for other Somali families when she saw like the school system was trying to play them because like, you know, you're black. You don't know what's going on here. This is the best way to do stuff. So yeah, just like a strong person. I wish I was as just unafraid as she was. Maybe she was afraid. She just never showed it, you know?
Yeah. I love a strong woman who loves to give a lot of feedback.
Yeah, that was her. Even when I didn't want it, like she would always let me know how she felt about things. Yeah, that's the part that like I think I, if there's any regret I have, is not getting to know my mom as a person. Hmm. Because I think about, yeah, like, well, who was she as a person? Like, what does she like to do? What was her favorite color? I don't even know. She loved music. That's one thing I do know. She loved, like, I remember Sam Cooke. We had Sam Cooke in the house. And she was a big fan of, like, Somali, like, there's a lot of Somali poetry and a lot of, like, really great Somali singers. So a lot of times she might be playing that in the household. But truly, that, like, I know the things she likes. I don't know if watching news is a hobby, but I know she liked watching the news. Like she was always like reading every paper, just on top of everything. Like, yeah, like she was the type of person who got the Toronto Star and would go through it front to back. We traveled a lot as a family, like because we lived in Kenya for about like 8.5 years. Mm. My mom would always knew how much I hated waking up early, so would try to make it up to us at times by like maybe buying us a candy or doing something nice for us during the day. Cause she's like, I know you don't want to be up at 6 a.m. to go check out this ruin. So here's something nice.
That's so sweet. So wait, you left Somalia in 92, came to Toronto and then moved back to Kenya.
Yeah. So we moved from Somalia. Like left Somalia as refugees. I think we might've stopped over in Kenya and then came to Toronto. Got our citizenship, and then my mom found a job with the UN in Kenya, and so we moved there, and she was working as a nutritionist in Kenya, but mostly in Somalia, so she would travel there. And so for the first couple of years, we were in a boarding school, a British boarding school there, because she just wasn't around to see us. And I know that this is something that she felt terrible about, because she told me she felt terrible about that. In hindsight, I get it. Like, it was what a drastic change moving to another country and then immediately to a boarding school. Two different trips of traveling to one foreign place and then another completely foreign place within that area. She was not just a person who loved traveling. Like, I just want to go see different parts of the world, but like was so interested in the history of places. Mm-hmm. So like when we went to Egypt, it was like, she was so interested in like learning about the history of like these different, like, you know, going to the pyramids, going to these different like ruins and really like just like was actually paying attention to what the guides were saying. As for me, I'm just like, it's hot out here. I'm tired. I'm just looking like, this is kind of tall. It's crazy how they get it that tall. Like, I'm just, you know, those are the thoughts, very simple thoughts happening, but mostly related to how uncomfortable I am right now in this place. I remember one time she went to, I think the south of Spain has like some beautiful architecture somewhere, I think, in the south of Spain. And so she, a couple of years before she passed away, she was like, I'm going to go to South Spain. Do you want to come with me? And I was just like, no, man, I just haven't had this is the first time when I get to have a full summer in Toronto. I just want to experience what a summer in Toronto is like. I was an idiot. Who knew that I would experience decades of summers in Toronto. But I was like, I gotta experience this one, because we had moved back like only maybe a few years prior, and I'd always wanted to come back to Toronto. So for me, it was like, I just want to know what it's like to be. I felt like I missed out, like growing up, spending all my formative years in Kenya. A part of me felt disconnected because I was like, I'm missing out on some shit in Toronto right now. I'm missing out on what are the kids my age in Toronto doing. Or we didn't have satellite. We had like basic cable. So I wasn't catching The Simpsons and all these other shows that people were watching at that time. And I was like, I don't know what these references are. I'm like, just, I'm lost, you know? I don't know what people are talking about. I watch Cartoon Network. And if they're not watching Cartoon Network, I'm lost, you know? So I remember just being like, yeah, I want to experience summer here. And then she went to Spain and like took a bunch of photos and like brought back some books of of like explaining the history of some of these like buildings and stuff. And I was just like, yeah, she loved like just learning about like different parts of the world and like appreciating their history. I don't know if this is me going back now in time and rewriting history to make me feel better about this current, like how life has panned out. I was rebelling at age 20, rebelling for the first time ever. I disagreed with my mom, but I had never actually rebelled, you know, be like, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. This is me just like doing my own thing. And so I would stay out late many nights in a row. And I did not like staying up late. I hated it. But just to, because she always wanted me to be home at a certain time. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I felt at times it was just this control thing. Like she just, I think she had a very, I don't know, because I wish I could have talked to her about this, which was, I just never quite understood why our relationship was as like contentious as it was at times. Like I didn't know why she ruled with the iron fist at times. Like why, yeah, she was just worried. So I would stay out till 2 a.m. and we were beefing. I would say that's my mom and Gulet, our beefing period is East Coast, West Coast. Nobody died, but I did get locked out of the house several times. Like, so that's where I feel, that's where our relationship was just about to turn, because just before she went into the hospital, I felt like we were having a little bit of an understanding. Like maybe she was starting to see where I was coming from for the first time. And then she went to the hospital. I was still in her eyes. Like I always will be her, always was her child in her eyes, but like she treated me like a child. Like I was like a, just could not fend for myself type of energy, which she was right. Like I struggle even till this day being assertive, you know, it's something I'm working on, but she was very much like, yeah, just the type of person who did not respect private space, would just come into my room and be like, I'm like, why are you just barging in? What's going on? You know? And yeah. Was always big on like, especially towards the end of her life, like she became a lot more religious. So she was praying a lot more and wanted the same for us, but I did not care about it. Neither did my sister as well. So we were getting woken up in the morning to like do the Fajr prayer, like the early morning prayer before the sun rises. And that's like some bullshit. especially if I got to be up in the next couple hours to go to school, I'm like, you just ruined my sleep. I'm not sleeping again, you know? Yeah. So I'm up at 5 a.m. for no reason. Like I felt like, I was like, you're worried about my soul, but I'm worried about getting enough sleep, you know? Yeah. I felt like I was going through my teenage years at 20. So I was like, man, I think we were so close to maybe actually having a conversation about just ourselves, of who we are as people. And I remember at that time, one of my cousins was staying over a lot because we lived in the middle of the York University campus. But I went to the University of Toronto downtown campus because I did not want to have to come home for lunch. Because I knew if I was right on the York campus, my mom would be like, why aren't you coming home for lunch? That's the type of person she was, you know? And if I told her, like, I don't.
That was your reason for going to St. George, though?
Yeah, that was my reason. I was like, I don't want to come home for lunch. I did not want to come home for lunch. So if I'm 45 minutes away, it's obviously no reasonable person would say come home for lunch, you know? Yeah. It would take too long. That was truly my main reason. I was like, I didn't care about the program one way or another in either of the schools. In fact, if I cared about my own well-being, why not be at a place, a rock throw from where I was? I could walk to class every day and it'd be so much more relaxed. But I was like, no, I just want to be as far away from the house as possible, but not move out, you know, as far as you can get from the house without actually moving out. And so my cousin was staying over because he went to York. And he had an early morning class one day a week that he was like, I just can't make the trip from Mississauga every day. Like, it's just too long. And so at that time, he was getting to know my mom. And so they were having a lot of conversations. And I remember he would tell me like, man, your mom is like super interesting, man. She's got like so many stories and stuff. And we were beefing at that time. And I was like, man, you got to pick a side, you know, you can't, you can't be both talking to me and my mom at the same time. Like this is, you know, I would just like, I looking back and I was like, oh, it's so silly. But like in that moment, I remember I was mad at her. Cause like we were struggling to understand each other. She was being, I thought, too controlling and unreasonable at times. And maybe I was also being unreasonable, but like I felt like, yeah, I feel like times we're just talking past each other, you know, like, cause she was like, I worry about your safety. And I'm like, but I'm a grown person. Like, I appreciate that. But like you can't always protect me, you know, like maybe it was her like struggling to let me go in some ways, you know, mm-hmm. That like she can't coddle me, you know, like she can't protect me from the world. Cause that's what she'd done up to that point. You know, writing letters on my behalf to schools and stuff and truly fighting all my battles. Like, I don't think I'd ever even had a argument with like a cell phone company about a bill because my mom was the one doing most of that stuff. You know, that's literally the type of person she was. She's like, no, I got this. Don't worry about it. And she was good at it. Like to her credit, like she knew exactly the things to say. So yeah, so that's like, I think that's where we were just before she passed away. I was like, man, I think we're just about to finally have a conversation as two adults. You know, but it just didn't happen. I always thought she got diagnosed in 2000. I don't know why. For some reason, my mind said 2000. But I was talking to my cousin recently. She was like, no, it actually happened in 98. That's when your mom got diagnosed with cancer. So that means I would have been, at that point, 11 when she got cancer. And my sister would have been 7. I don't remember her even. I don't know when I found out she had cancer. I wouldn't be surprised if my mom didn't quite explain it to us. Because like, I'm 11. I probably can't grasp it. My sister definitely wouldn't be able to grasp it. Yeah, like my memory is very fuzzy of like how I found out. I just knew for a long time mom had cancer. I just don't know the exact details. Yeah, she never told us, you know, like that's also one of the things I wish I had got a chance to find out, like what was it like for her? And because for me, I was like, I didn't, many times I just lived like she didn't have cancer. I didn't think about it, you know, and it's not even something she talked about much that I remember. So for me, I just felt like I was living with a mom who was, you know, just not letting her teenage son do shit. You know, that was my existence. She did a really good job of, I don't know if she ever burdened us. Like, I don't know if burden is the right word, but like, she didn't tell us much about what she was experiencing. Hmm. I remember only a few conversations the mom had with us about the fact that one day she might die. I only remember very few conversations about that I do remember being scared because like it felt like at that moment she was telling us like my way, do you know something we don't? Are you dying tomorrow? Like that's what it felt like when that conversation, I think we've had it like a couple times. Mm. But truly outside of that, I don't remember my mom sharing a lot of details with us about this is what I'm experiencing. That's one of the reasons I wish I could talk to her now, being like, what was going on through your mind? Because I don't, like, I wish I could understand maybe where some of, at times, maybe some of her anger was coming from. Was it related to that? Was some of her need for control related to the fact that she felt like she had no control over what was happening in her own body, you know? Questions I can only ask myself and maybe work out through therapy, but not things that I can get from her directly. Because she really, honestly, just lived up and about and just doing stuff, you know. I think I remember there's one event that I remember clearer than anything else, and that's the day she had to go to the hospital that I sensed in my heart would be, this is the end. Like I felt it. I'd come home from being out somewhere and she was talking to me. We lived at that time in the townhouse. And so I climbed up this like flight of stairs and her bedroom was right next to the staircase. She was talking to me about something. And while she was talking, in the middle of the conversation, out of nowhere, she just lost her balance, like just talking and then just fell sideways and hit her head against the doorframe. And I remember just being like, oh shit, what just happened? Like, I know this is not normal. People don't just fall like that. Mm-hmm. I remember like, just being panicked and not knowing what to do. And she was like, it's going to be okay. It's all right. Just call she asked me to call one of our Somali neighbors to come over and then call the paramedics as well. And I remember just the whole time she was like, I felt like she was being strong for the both of us. She was telling me it's going to be okay. Even though in my heart, I was like, I don't think it's going to be okay. I don't. When she was in the hospital, it looked like at one point, she might be okay, like she might beat this. And then it just turned and she went into a coma. And so her last week or so, she was in a coma. So with the doctors, when it was going to happen, they're like, I don't know, it can happen any moment. Maybe you have a day. We don't really know. I mean, it's hard to tell time. But, and so I remember whispering into ear, telling her that I loved her and that, you know, yeah, it was hard saying goodbye like that. Because I wish I could have and actually talked to her, you know. But I was like, I hope you can hear me. I don't know. And those are the last moments with her until they're like, oh, it's happening now. And I think she just coughed up a little bit of blood and that was it. And then it was like, okay, well, this is, I remember being mad at the time because of, like, I felt like she lived such a life, you know, a life that I didn't even get a chance to find out and talk to her about. And she had done so much. And I remember being angry that, like, oh, it just ends like this. This is it. Like she had done so much and worked so hard. And I remember being like almost mad at life, mad at God, you know, being like, are you serious? This is how it goes. Like, there's no other, like, you know, I don't even get to say goodbye to her. Like, it just ends like this. And I'm just being like, yeah, very, very mad about that. After my mom passed away, like, you know, that family members already praying for her, you know, they're doing like reading the different du'as and stuff. And then I'll see family members also, you know, embracing me and they helped with, like, you know, the 3 days of mourning that, like, I don't know if it's in Islam or Somali, but like we call it the tasi, which is like the people come to your house for 3 days afterwards. And so I had my aunts were with me and they were the ones organizing all of that. Mm-hmm. So they really provided a shield for my sister and I. So we didn't really have to deal with people. Like, we'd just come downstairs to say hi to people who came to pay their respects. And then that was all that was expected of us. They entertained them. They, you know, gave them food or whatever. And they also were functioned as bouncers to stop people from coming to the house at late, because people were like, it was kind of wild, even when I was in the hospital, to see how entitled people were to, like, wanting to show up whenever they wanted to show up and feeling disrespected that my aunts, who were a lot of times younger than them, were telling them, you can't. And they'd be like, do you know who I am? Like, essentially they're trying to, like, flex, like, the family connection of, do you know who I am? As opposed to, like, they have any actual power, you know, like, I run the hospital, you know, it's like, yeah. I'm your dad's, you know, first cousin, you know, it's like those type of, like, it's very weird. I think, even to think about it, to flex your relationship within the same family. It's like, I'm your first cousin. It's like, okay, what does that mean? I don't understand. Is that a power role? Like, what is, where do you rank these things? You know, there's a family power ranking of some sort that I'm not aware of. Till this day, I'm appreciative that they were there to take care of all these things, clean up the house, make food for us or buy food for us. So we weren't alone in the house, which was nice in one sense of, like, we had people around, but also something I'm only realizing now during this pandemic and finding out through therapy was, it was also sucked because I didn't really have space to just mourn, like, to be sad, because, like, there were people, there was company, you know. Like, I'm seeing some of these cousins, I hung out with them a handful of times, but this is the first time we spent this extended amount of period together. It's been a while since we last saw each other. So, you know, I felt like I was in some ways like entertaining guests, you know. My cousins moved in and they didn't feel comfortable sleeping on my mom's bed. One of my cousins took my room and then another cousin slept in a mattress on the floor of my mom's room and I slept in my mom's bed. And I remember, like, just at nighttime, like, crying, because it's the only time, like, I really had space where, like, no one was, I didn't have to entertain anybody because everyone's sleeping. But then also not being too loud because my cousin's literally sleeping next to the bed on the floor. So being like, I got to cry, but make it, like, quiet cry. I don't know if you ever heard. I don't know if you was, because, you know, sometimes people, you don't fall asleep immediately, or you might wake up at some point and be like, your eyes closed, but, like, you're still awake. So I've never talked to him. Like, did you hear me crying at night? Like, if you did, if you say anything, I'm have my lawyers find you. And I don't know what they're gonna do, but they're gonna make your life miserable. I mean, yeah, like I was very sad, like also very like numb in many ways, because she, like, my dad and mom had been divorced for almost my entire life, so there was no other parent I could lean on, and that parent is not even in the country. You know, he's all the way in Switzerland at this point. So I remember just feeling like, and it's a feeling that I still have till today, which is like, I've made peace with, which is like, oh, I'm alone, you know. Like, I have my sister, she's here. I got like my 1.0s and 3.0s, a lot of people who love me, cousins. My dad is one of 10, so I have a lot of first cousins. So I got a lot of people who care about me and would make sure, like, if anything was wrong, would drop whatever they were doing to help. But none of that felt like, all of that felt like it could never fill that hole that was my mom, you know, and how she was, like, she was the center of my life for, even when I was beefing with her, like she was the person I was beefing with, you know. It was nobody else, it was her. So all these things were like just like hitting me. I'm like, oh man, like, this is, that's it. Like, I have to learn how to do these things on my own. But I do remember generally feeling sad, but couldn't be too sad because there was at least three other people in the house. I wish I had someone to watch over me, because the transition was like, this is the person who's doing all this stuff, and then nobody, and now it's me, you know? But luckily, like, we had our dad was still supporting us. I had to learn how to do all these things for the first time on my own. Like, I had to grocery shop by myself for the first time ever. Like, I felt I moved very quickly from being taken care of to then being the one taking care of others. And yeah, like, just a lot of, like, just transition of, like, being, oh, now I got to be the head of the household all of a sudden. When I hear grief, I think, like you were talking about, like crying, like, to actually, like, let myself be sad to the point that I'm crying, you know, or remember the pain that I'm crying. And I did very little of that, you know, like, because I didn't have my own space to do that. I don't remember crying all that much, or having a lot of room to cry. I think truly this pandemic is the first time that I'm probably, like, grieving, like, in a way that I never got to when it actually happened, because things just moved, like, everything just moved, you know. I just had to start doing things, you know. I remember it starting, like, kind of early in the pandemic, where I was just like, I'm feeling like a sadness, like a heaviness that I just assumed was just the pandemic. Like, you know, grieving the life that we once had and that maybe won't be that same way going forward. But then I was just talking about in therapy of how it was very hard to find, like, I just felt like I had to do stuff the entire day. Like, I got to do something. Either I'm reading something or watching something or playing something, and then cycling through different size screens as fast as I can. You know, like, if there couldn't be a moment of silence where, like, if someone stopped playing on the TV, pull up my phone. If it stopped playing on my phone, pull up the TV again. And as my therapist had pointed, I was like, oh, it sounds like grief, you know? Sounds like the thing that you're going through is grief. And it's like the general feeling is trying to make peace with some of the ways my mom raised us, you know. It's been a lot of, like, dealing with those feelings of, like, oh man, I wish our relationship had been different. And then also trying to find my way through that, still that feeling of, like, oh, it can get very strong where I feel like I'm alone in this world. That protection that my mom provided, I will never have that. Find that within myself. How can I give that to myself? You know, how can I make myself feel like it's going to be okay, which is very hard, like self-soothing, you know, in some way, like rubbing my own back, being like, it's going to be okay, you know. That's been the big thing of, like, trying to make peace with the ways my mom raised us, and the sadness of, like, I'll never know her story, because now I'll only ever hear it through other people. I hope one day I don't feel so alone. Just me and my thoughts. And, you know, it's so far the thoughts are winning. You know, they're up in the series, but my plan is to turn around. We got a new coach in, and I think we can push it. It might be go to game seven. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know what sport you're talking about. But I'm going to say baseball, game seven.
I don't know. I used to think that grieving was like you had to do it within a certain time. And the more I learn about and talk about it in therapy, it's like it's a process that you will make progress on it at times when you least expect to maybe make progress on it. Like it moves in people at different paces, at different pace. And so like just being okay with however you're grieving and to not feel like you have to like rush through it. Like it's going to happen. And maybe you can find time and space to do it, great. But if not, because also, you know, we live in a world where you got to pay bills and keep moving. You can't just be like, I want to take 3 months off for grieving. And you guys figure out that just, take your time and hopefully be a little kinder to yourself.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, I will say I literally got to take 6 weeks off for grieving. And that's it still so great. Help. So, it was nice, but it did not help.
I've been thinking about this whole grieving on a schedule myth a lot lately, and it's truly bonkers to me that we let ourselves believe that we can move through grief in a calendar year like it's a 12-step program. Even the way we talk about the 5 stages of grief model that many of us are familiar with suggests a linear progression: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, as if these are stops on the map you're supposed to move through to get to Happy Town. But that's not how it works. Grief is not linear, and there's no right way or right time. The only right thing to do is to be kind to yourself. That's all this week. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast to listen, and please rate and leave us a review. It really helps. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at FindersGrievers and write to us at findersgrievers@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.